the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. 100 million missing girls. That's a stunning statistic, is it not? Well, speaking of stunning, the cover story in this week's edition of The Economist is absolutely chilling and horrifying, and you need to know about it. The Economist is one of the major periodicals of the world in terms of news and analysis. In Great Britain, it's kind of a combination of Time Magazine and The Wall Street Journal. And folks, you've got something really interesting going on there when you have a news magazine of this particular influence running a cover story with the word gendercide on it. Okay, folks, with the word gendercide, they're making a very clear point that what you're talking about here is the homicide of well over 100 million baby girls. And that is a matter, obviously, of tremendous moral consequence. And folks, it's out in the open. This is not something that is hidden. We're talking about abortion and infanticide. We're talking primarily about China and northern India. We're talking about a preference for boys that has reached the point that this preference, matched with China's one-child-only policy, matched with certain cultural prejudices, has led to the fact that it's deadly dangerous to be a baby girl in the home or in the womb in some regions of the world. Now, the social ramifications of this, if you're just a sociologist or a demographer looking at this, you're looking at the reality that you've got an imbalance of 130 baby boys in some Chinese provinces born to every 100 baby girls. So you're going to end up with every 230 children, you're going to end up with 30 boys who have no hope of growing up and having a wife or a family. You're talking about a massive social disaster. But, of course, the moral disaster looms far larger than that. You're talking about a murderous campaign against baby girls. You're talking about a society that so devalues the feminine, so devalues the female, so devalues women and girls, that there is an old Hindu proverb, and that is to raise a baby girl is to water another man's garden. It's a very, very sad commentary, but it's something that is now out in the open. It has been denied by some, although the statistics simply now can't be denied. China and India have both officially outlawed sex selection abortions, but folks, they're still happening because there's nothing to prevent someone from going in and paying $12, American $12, to get an ultrasound. If they find out that it's a baby girl, it's very easy just to abort. The news article that offers the analysis for The Economist, it's a massive investigative report, begins with a Chinese writer talking about being there for the birth of a child. She hears a man's voice go, "Useless thing," and then she hears a body plopped into a pail of waste, and the baby's drowned. It means very little to do a girl around here. That is to kill a girl, said an elderly woman who was there at the scene. Folks, culture makes a difference. We'll be talking about what this means. We're going to be talking about why it is that this should be very much front and center in terms of the world's moral consciousness. And we're going to talk about what produces this and what in the world we would say is a matter of moral response. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I say right away, congratulations to The Economist for having the nerve and the courage to do such a massive investigative report and to make the numbers clear. By the way, that number of 100 million missing girls dates all the way back to 1990. It could well be 200 million now. Some other issues in the news are really interesting. USA Today yesterday was out with a very interesting article. And in Tuesday's edition also, it was dealing with the issue of the legalization of marijuana. The headline in Tuesday's edition was, "Slowly, limits on pot are fading." A new era of acceptance, reports William Welch for USA Today. And, of course, it all began with what was called medicinal marijuana, or marijuana that supposedly was being grown and used for medicinal purposes. And it looks like there's very credible evidence that there is a medicinal aspect to cannabis and to the smoking of it that has to do with the alleviation of pain. And, of course, that's a narcotic effect. That's what narcotics do. They have the opportunity to block the nervous system from sending the neurotransmitters, sending that kind of pain signal. And that's why there are other narcotics beyond the kind that you can smoke that are obviously routinely prescribed by doctors for people in pain. But marijuana is not functioning that way, at least in many cases. There's the tacit acceptance of the fact that a lot of doctors are writing prescriptions for people who just want to smoke marijuana. And it looks like state by state, it is indeed becoming such a matter now of regular use that one particular authority said, let's face reality, taxing and regulating marijuana will make it less available to children than it is today. So that's where the logic of this is going. If you can't beat it, tax it. So it's the same kind of logic that was used with gambling and the proposals to lead to the acceptance and spread of gambling in many areas and other vices as well. Folks, just don't estimate this issue as being of no moral consequence and no social consequence. Because when a society not only decriminalizes something like the use of marijuana, but indeed then goes on to regulate it and try to gain income by taxing it, you're going to end up with the same kind of perverse incentives you have with alcohol in this society, where the society is saying, don't get drunk and don't drive. You know, it supposedly has this great animus and moral judgment against drunk driving, but the same government that is sending that signal and making the arrest in virtually all 50 states is also gaining a good bit of its tax income off of the sale of those very same beverages. That puts the state, the government, in a very morally compromised position. We've been talking about the fact that culture matters. I want to give you two further examples, both of them, just a reminder that culture is a combination of moral values and moral judgments and of social mores and language and all the rest that makes one society different than some other society, one culture different than some other culture. And we're living in a time when people say, well, every culture is the same. Every culture is equally valid. Every cultural linguistic system is just as valuable as any other. It stands on its own, and there's no way you can morally interrogate one from the other. In this postmodern world, there are a lot of people who try to tell us that. You can't make moral judgments across cultures. Well, Nicholas Kristof is making one, and I'm thankful he is. I don't agree with him on everything. As a matter of fact, I disagree with Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times on many things, but I never fail to read his article because they're always well-informed, even if it's taking a position that I don't agree with. I do agree with him here. In his editorial that was published on March the 4th entitled Divorced Before Puberty, he writes about what goes on in some Yemeni cultures in which you have young girls who are forced to get married before puberty. The particular girl he's talking about here, Najud Ali, was a pint-sized third grader when she was given to another man as his bride. And she has a new autobiography out, which is published in the United States. It's entitled, I Am Najud, Age 10, and Divorced. She escaped this particular abusive marriage. And I'm not going to go into the details here. The husband promised Najud's father that he would not consummate the marriage until she was older, but he broke that vow and beat her, and she has now escaped. But you're talking about a third grader who's now divorced. Culture matters, folks. You bet it matters. It matters to this little girl. Let me just point out that the American culture has its own issues, and we certainly talk about the problems of American culture. But let me tell you, this little girl didn't seek refuge by going just anywhere. She came here. And the reasons for this become very, very clear. She came to the West. She came where she would find protection. Speaking of, a mess and the fact that culture matters, there's a lot of controversy right now going on in Africa and in South Africa in particular about Jacob Zuma, who is the president of South Africa. He is over 80 years old, and he's involved in a sex scandal. He is now admitting having fathered his 20th child. He has had five wives. He's married five times. And according to what I'm reading here in the Financial Times, he's divorced from two of them, which I guess means he's married still to more than one of them. And he, by the way, had this child, which he has now admitted to be his, with neither of those, or how can I say, none of the women to whom he has been married, but rather someone to whom he's never been married. The mother is the daughter of Ivan Kozoa, a football magnate who chairs South Africa's World Cup Organizing Committee. You know, folks, this is leading to the question as to whether this is going to diminish the credibility of Jacob Zuma, his domestic difficulties to undermine his effectiveness in office. Of course, you know, in whatever culture you are, people have enough sanity to know that one's moral life, marital life, has a great deal to do with one's credibility for leadership. But again, culture matters. It matters if you're in a culture where polygamy makes sense. It matters if you're in a culture where marrying off 10-year-old girls makes sense. It matters if you live in a culture in which the abortion and infanticide of baby girls by the tens and tens of millions makes sense. We're going to come back to talk about gaining a moral sense of gravity, some moral sense in the midst of gendercide, the effort literally to kill over 100 million baby girls. Do we care about this or not? The Economist comes back to say the world needs to know something about this and do something about it. Let's talk about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The cover of The Economist this week is absolutely stunning. As a matter of fact, it's horrifying. All you have to do is see the visual image, and it's got you. In bold pink capital letters, the word gendercide. And then the question, what happened to 100 million baby girls? And then a pair of pink booties, quite empty pink booties found at the bottom of the page. It has to do with what we now know is going on in China and northern India. And elsewhere in the world, by the way, but concentrated in China and northern India, and that is a gendercide against baby girls. You're talking about the intentional effort to abort baby girls before they are born, and in a horrifying number of cases, beyond that horror, to kill them by infanticide after they are born or to neglect them unto their death. In 1990, economist Amartya Sen, very well-known world authority, estimated that 100 million baby girls were missing, sacrificed by parents who desired a son. 2 decades later, multiple millions of missing baby girls must be added to that total, victims of abortion, infanticide, and neglect. The murder of girls is especially common in China and northern India, where a preference for sons produces a situation that's nothing less than critical for baby girls. I wrote a major article about this. It's published today at albertmueller.com. The Economist explains, quote, nature dictates that slightly more males are born than females to offset boys' greater susceptibility to infant disease, but nothing on this scale. What's the scale? In some provinces of China, there are now 130 boys born for every 100 girls. Folks, that is not a natural imbalance that can be explained by anything other than an intentional effort to rid many millions of baby girls. One Chinese writer wrote of being at the birth of a child. She said she heard a man's voice respond to the sight of the newborn baby girl. Useless thing, he cried. The witness then heard a plop in the slops pail. To my absolute horror, she wrote, I saw a tiny foot poking out of the pail. The midwife must have dropped that tiny baby alive into the slops pail. When she tried to intervene, she was restrained by police. An older woman simply explained to her, quote, doing a baby girl is not a big thing around here. Folks, we're talking about a very different understanding of human life. And we're talking about a distinction of human life between a boy and a girl, a baby boy and a baby girl. Just how is that devaluation made clear? Well, midwives even charge more in China to deliver a boy than a girl because it's considered a superior product, a more valuable product. Now, there are socioeconomic issues that are here. A son becomes an economic assist to his parents, whereas in many of these cultures, a daughter becomes an economic drain. It's an incredibly sad thing. There is one sentence in this report that I found particularly horrifying. And just to understand what we're talking about here, listen to this one sentence from this investigative report in The Economist. Quote, in one hospital in Punjab in northern India, the only girls born after a round of ultrasound scans had been mistakenly identified as boys or else had a male twin, end quote. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK, toll free, 877-893-8255. The Economist explains, and I read here, this is a paragraph you need to hear. In fact, the destruction of baby girls is a product of three forces, the ancient preference for sons, a modern desire for smaller families, and ultrasound scanning and other technologies that identify the sex of a fetus. In societies where four or six children were common, a boy would almost certainly come along eventually. Son preference did not need to exist at the expense of daughters, but now couples want two children, or, as in China, are allowed only one. They will sacrifice unborn daughters in their pursuit of a son. That's why sex ratios are most distorted in the modern open parts of China and India. It's also why ratios are more skewed after the first child. Parents may accept a daughter the first time around, but will do anything to ensure their next and probably last child is a boy. The boy-girl ratio is above 200 for a third child in some places. So I'll tell you, I've been following this story for a long time. We've talked about it on this program. I've written several articles about this, including one about broken branches, these Chinese young men who have no hope for a wife and a family and a sex life that's in any way normal. But I had never seen until this report in The Economist numbers that were skewed this badly. I did not know. Did you hear what I just read you? The boy-girl ratio is above 200 for a third child in some places in China and India. Absolutely unbelievable. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Glad to hear from you by email. Write us at mail@albertmoeller.com, Facebook, Albert Moeller or Moeller Radio, the Albert Moeller Program, Twitter at Albert Moeller or Moeller Radio. Very interesting the way The Economist tries to explain this. There's obviously just a sense of moral outrage here. In this moral outrage, let me tell you, it has the immediate revulsion of understanding the devaluation of human life. Anyone who believes that every single human life is made in the image of God could never see anything less than a genocide against females here. An atrocious, unbelievable, horrifying, almost unspeakable gendercide, as it is called by one author, that word picked up by The Economist, and rightly so. The social cost of this, the cultural costs, are massive. Just imagine all of these boys growing up to be young men who have no hope of a wife, no hope of a family, no hope of marriage. You know, as The Economist notes, most of the crime in all societies is committed by young men as antisocial behavior, the way that modern social theorists like to label it. And marriage has been the great civilizing and morally restraining institution in the lives of young men. Well, now you take that away, you can imagine what's going to happen. What happens when you tell hundreds of millions of young men you will never have a wife, there are simply not enough women? It's a social disaster. You know, from a Christian worldview perspective, it's just a reminder that God gave us creation as an interwoven web of good things. And when you mess up one particular part of the web, you mess up other parts as well. And here you turn murderously against the image of God in every single little girl and make girls vulnerable. You also create boys who have lives warped by the absence of a wife. It was God himself, the creator, who said it is not good for man to be alone. And now you have these young men in China who refer to themselves as broken branches because they're just going to be broken off of the family tree. There will be no children. There will be no wife. The phone number is 877-893-8255. It's got a Hot Springs, Arkansas. Margale is listening to KWXI. Go ahead, Margale.
Hi, how are you? Well, how's this going to comment, you know, because China is a communist country and they frown upon all religion. There's no, it doesn't matter what even type of religion that is. You know, it's kind of like a, either thinking is set on default in Darwinism or evolution to a certain extent. So their devaluation of life is just kind of in default mode. So just aborting kids is, you know, just survival of the species, pretty much.
You know, Margale, you're on to a very important issue there. And again, it goes back to what we were talking about early in the program. Worldview matters, but moral convictions matter. I think you're right to point to communism not only in terms of its devaluation of human life, but in its despotism. Because you're talking here in China, this doesn't explain India, but it does explain much of China. You're talking about a despotic state. I mean, it's a one-party dictatorship that has this draconian one-child-only policy, which, by the way, we need to notice, Margale, is celebrated by many liberals and, you know, the population limitation folks who are talking about the population explosion. Even when they know it means abortion and infanticide. I think the bigger issue there, by the way, has to do not only with communism, but with the Confucian worldview and with worldviews that devalue the meaning of human life. You know, human life is only sacred if you believe that every single human life is made by God, created by God, with every single human being bearing his image. That makes all the difference. The phone number 877-893-TALK will be right back with more on the Albert Moeller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The broken branches in China refers not to the aborted and murdered baby girls by the numbers well over 100 million, but to the boys and young men who have absolutely no hope of a wife or of a family. You can just imagine what this now represents, but it's not something that can be remedied in terms of those who are now alive. You have an 18-year-old boy or 18-year-old young man right now with no hope of a wife. You can't just instantly decide this was a mistake. We're going to rectify this. It's too late. It's not too late for the babies that are in the womb right now and for the little girls that are in risk right now. But you're talking about the legacy of centuries of prejudice, centuries, that is now matched to a modern technology. I wrote in my article I published this morning at albertmohler.com that one of the saddest aspects of this is that, for instance, here in the United States, the development of the ultrasound has been a great boost to the pro-life argument, the pro-life movement, because we've learned that women, when they actually see the humanity, the undeniable humanity of the baby, find it far more difficult to abort. So in that sense, the ultrasound has been the friend of unborn babies in this country, no doubt. But in other parts of the world, where the prejudice is so much against girls, it's a death sentence when the ultrasound reveals a girl. Okay, now we're talking about China and India here specifically because that's where the burden of the greatest number of these abortions and the murders of girls is taking place. But let me tell you, Sweden, that's right, in Europe, Sweden in 2009 legalized sex selection abortions. And yet they celebrate the fact that in that country there's no particular prejudice one way or the other, so parents can choose. Some choose boys, some choose girls. Is their right? It's equally wrong. In fact, it's given the heritage of Sweden and its Christian conscience and the background of its culture, it's even doubly horrifying. The number is 877-893-8255. Lots of calls coming. Yours could be next. 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Damon is listening on WTLN. Go ahead, Damon.
Good afternoon. I enjoy listening to this program, and I just thought I would call in and comment that I believe that the United States probably does not speak out against this atrocity as it should for economic reasons. For one, I heard recently that China owns about $900 billion of U.S. Securities, and they're one of our major creditors. And I believe the scripture that I was reminded of is that the borrower is servant to the lender.
Yep.
And I believe that we've really weakened our ability to stand up and speak the truth on issues like this. And it's pretty saddening. It'd be nice to get out of debt so we can do what's right and stand up for right and truth.
All right, Damon, let me tell you, what you just did there was the intellectual task of connecting the dots, and a brilliant display of that. You're absolutely right. As a society, we are so deeply indebted in terms of outright debt held by China, in terms of American Treasury debt, that we are politically constrained from saying what we ought to say, doing what we ought to do. And so there again, it just shows you it's a basic principle. Debt is morally significant, whether it's held by an individual, a couple, a family, a corporation, or a nation. And Damon, thank you. Great demonstration of how to connect the dots. One moral issue always leads to another. I mentioned that web of moral issues earlier. It always works that way, and it's good. It's a good exercise in intelligent Christian thinking to figure that out. So in one sense, we're kind of subsidizing this. That's the bottom line. When they hold that much debt, yeah, they're basically putting us in the position of subsidizing this by our debt payments as well, the whole regime. Well, let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Sandy's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Sandy.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I visited China, and the guide mentioned the situation of the one-child policy, and he said that many of the young men are now called, they have what they call the little emperor syndrome, because many of the Chinese holidays revolves around the family, but there's only one child. And so the young man who's the fortunate young man that is showered with all the gifts and all the attention, he develops a little bit of an ego, and so they call it the little emperor syndrome.
Sandy, I appreciate that insight, and I've read that, but you've had the experience of seeing that yourself and actually having a tour guide explain that. I think that's very significant. It's kind of an undeniable fact on the ground. Someone's got to explain. And let me tell you, males have enough ego to begin with. You make the male an only child and pamper him as a family project. And, yeah, you're going to have a little emperor. In fact, it takes the full measure of Christian parental fortitude to make sure that every little boy doesn't turn into a little emperor. In this case, broken branches by their own designation as well. The number's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking here about gendercide, the cover story in The Economist this week. It's a major story in itself. The fact that The Economist did the cover story is huge. It's huge, and it's important, and that's why we're talking about it. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Broken branches. That refers to all these boys who have no hope of marriage because of well over 100 million missing girls. You know, ideas have consequences. Richard Weaver wrote that years and years ago, and how true it is. Moral judgments have consequences. Cultural prejudices have consequences. And here's one we just simply can't deny. Let's go to Ashby, Massachusetts. Steve's listening on WVNE. Go ahead, Steve.
Yes, hi. In regard to what you're talking about with gendercide, it certainly impacts the heart. But I've got to say, and just I guess in response to you, that without the transforming power of the gospel of Jesus Christ, we shouldn't be at all surprised at what we're hearing about this. And, I mean, even in this country, we can't put aside the, you know, 40-plus million children who have been murdered because they just, as you said, cannot see that we are made in the image of God and foreordained for a purpose that's His. So we get caught up in this thought that people are basically good. So when oftentimes people look at this, they say, what a horrendous thing, but it's only God and only the Spirit of God that can give people any kind of moral conscience to recognize what this really is.
Yeah, you know, Steve, again, wonderful connection of the dots here. I appreciate your call so much. And what you have displayed here is a gospel-driven worldview, a worldview that understands the decisive, singular difference that the gospel makes. I would simply contest only one thing you say, and that in terms of just an adjustment in one thing you said, when you said this shouldn't shock us. I know the sense in which you mean it, and I frankly agree in the sense in which you mean it. There's nothing that we should believe human beings are incapable of, because we know the species, we know the fall, we know the consequences of sin, we know the ugliness of the human heart. The human heart's desperately wicked. Who can understand it? Asked the prophet, and that's absolutely true. But I would say we still are shocked and still are properly shocked at times because of the concentration of sin, because of the magnitude of sin, whether it's the Holocaust in Germany or this Holocaust of gendercide, or as you so rightly said, the abortion of now over 50 million unborn babies in the United States. The issue there is that God did make us in His image. And there's a key gospel category that Paul talks about in Romans 1, and that's the conscience and restraining grace. We should be thankful that not all people do this. We should be thankful that not all people do murder, that not all people do commit adultery. We should be thankful that God has given us structures of creation and structures of society, and in particular the law and conscience, which even in its fallen state still has some restraining power, and I'm very thankful for that. But as Paul says in Romans chapter 2, you can't trust it. You can't trust it because we can cauterize the conscience. As Thomas Aquinas said, we can convulse the conscience and make it stand on its head and lie to us. As Hannah Arendt said in looking at World War II, how is it that so many of the children of Nazi camp guards and workers would remember them as kind fathers? How is it that they would never cheat on their taxes, never cheat on their wife, but put Jews into ovens? You know, obviously we can do horrible things with the conscience. And you mentioned America, Steve. Let me tell you, America does horrible things with the conscience. We try our very best to deny what goes on in the abortuaries of this country and to deny our own complicity as a culture in every single aborted baby in this society. and, of course, systemic injustice that is here, too. But when we're talking about what's going on in China and India, we look at that and we say, why there? Well, you look at ancient Greece. In ancient Greece, there was a prejudice against girls. Many girls were simply the victims of infanticide. They were literally put out for animals to carry away. You know, horrifying things, but never on this scale, at least in terms of human history. And that ought to have our attention. You know, I really appreciate all the callers today. Very intelligent conversation. Good points, good connection of the dots, good weaving of the worldview, good analysis and figuring these things out. And I especially appreciate what Steve had to say, just in terms of a gospel-focused worldview, because that is where The Economist ends its article. We can't end the discussion. From a secular point of view, you can look at this and say it's wrong, but, you know, The Economist is really hard-pressed to say why it's wrong. And I want to tell you, if you do not accept that every single human being is made in the image of God, and thus the termination of any life in this sense is an absolute sin and an act of murder, an act of treason against the God whose image is in every single human being. If you don't understand the inherent immorality of abortion and infanticide, then you're going to have a hard time explaining why this is wrong. And that's why, for instance, in the West, where we think we're so enlightened and so morally progressive, what in the world do feminists do with this? You know, they can only look to all these aborted girls and say it's a horrible prejudice against girls. I'm holding here an article in my hand, one response to the same phenomenon, indeed, even the story in The Economist. And we've got secular folks in the press trying to argue this isn't about the sanctity of human life, this story. This is about sexism. Well, tell that to the babies whose lives are ended, snuffed out in the womb, or for that matter, in the crib or in the slops pail. It is a sanctity of life issue. It's first and foremost a sanctity of life issue. But at the same time, I want to say, of course, it's a sexism issue. But sexism, where it is properly understood as sin, in this case, the devaluation of female life, it is tied to the rejection of the image of God in every single human being. You can't, in other words, separate the sexism from the sanctity of human life. You know, you've got, and I'm seriously, I've got an article here before me in which the author says, if we just remove this prejudice against women, it would end the whole practice. Well, number one, it wouldn't end abortion, not in China with the one-child-only policy, and it wouldn't end sex selection abortion. For instance, you know, again, we have Sweden bragging that it has allowable, legal sex selection abortion, but there's a balance between the number of aborted boys and aborted girls. So everything's supposedly fine. Now, we're living in a time of moral insanity, folks. It takes 24/7 intelligent Christian thinking, going back to the scriptures again and again and again, having our mind and our thinking conformed to the image of Christ again and again and again, because otherwise, let me tell you, we're just going to find ourselves in a whirlpool of moral confusion. And if you doubt that, just look at the local newspaper. Just take a quick listen to one of the major cable networks. Just listen to the conversation going on around us. It is moral insanity. And the amazing thing is, in an article like this, I'm so thankful The Economist did this, because it puts it out in front of the world to see. It's a bold and very, very credible and important report. But at the end of the day, it isn't even able to point to the direction of any recovery, because there's just not enough of a worldview there that can get us where we need to go. That's where we do have to talk about the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's where we have to talk about the regenerating power of God, which literally transforms the mind. This is where we have to talk about bringing every thought into subjection to Christ. That's where we have to talk about the Creator setting the rules and not we ourselves. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I want to be thankful to you as an audience, and also to our readers who go to the website and read what I write. The article today has been picked up as running number one in Google News right now on the issue, which is nice. Folks are having a chance to read not only an analysis of the infanticide and abortion, but also what it means from a Christian worldview perspective. You'll find my article at Albert Mueller, that's MOHLER.com. It also runs in some other places as a syndicated column, and I'm glad to have folks use the article And I hope that it will be used to open some eyes and open some hearts. But of course, ultimately, my hope in all of these things is not merely that people will see a moral problem and agree with the analysis, but rather they'll come to understand the only means of escape, the only means of rescue, and that is by the gospel of Jesus Christ. We'll continue this discussion. We'll continue to follow this story. It's not over by a long shot. And I'm looking forward with some anticipation to seeing what the response comes to this article, both from China and India and from folks around the world. Word has just come in. You're going to find this interesting. The lawsuit filed by Michael Newdow, who, after all, had filed before to get the name of God off of currency, etc. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco upheld the use of the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance and in the words in God we trust in U.S. currency, rejecting arguments on Thursday that the phrases violate the separation of church and state. That just handed down, even as we're on the program here, by the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Judge Carlos B., writing for the majority in a 2-1 ruling of a 3-judge panel, said the Pledge of Allegiance serves to unite our vast nation through the proud recitation of some of the ideals upon which our republic was founded. The pledge is constitutional. Very, very interesting. He also had filed a suit about the pledge that reached the Supreme Court in 2004. That court decided that Newdow lacked the legal standing. He's a doctor and a lawyer. He filed it on behalf of other parents who objected to the recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance. By the way, it was a separate 3-0 ruling on Thursday in which the appeals court upheld the inscription of the motto "In God We Trust" on coins and currency, saying that the phrase is ceremonial and patriotic, not religious. You know, folks, this is the two-edged sword. You need to remember that the courts are ruling that this language is allowable because it's not theologically significant. It's just a reminder of that thing out there that exists called civil religion, made up of those references to God that aren't a reference to any particular God, but rather are supposed to be ceremonial and patriotic. We as Christians have to point to more, but I don't want to live in a society where the state is considered God. At least putting in God our trust is a reminder that that is not true. Newdow's response, reached by a reporter telling him the court ruled against him, was, "Oh man, what a bummer." Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.